If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. Gee, it's good to have your company. A fabulous Friday. Every Friday is fabulous, especially where I'm broadcasting from in Sydney Town. This is the Australian edition of TNT Radio. 2 hours of the latest big news from down under and commentary and opinion with plenty of attitude, which is exactly the way we like it here at TNT. First up, Joe Biden has taken another swing at the Chinese government, claiming the Chinese are xenophobic. Now, as soon as I heard that, when I got up this morning, I thought to myself, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. I actually think that Biden is the xenophobe. You think about what he's been saying about China and think about what he's been saying, more importantly, about Russia. He thinks Putin's about to march into Western Europe. He thinks China's about to conquer every part of the Indo-Pacific, including Australia. They believe this stuff. But I wanted to comment on China today and whether all of this sensitivity over China's military ambitions is inaccurate. And it's not just Joe Biden. There are other Western leaders saying the same kind of thing. NATO just about every week says that Putin's next aim will be to take over Europe. As if. We'll get to the politically incorrect but very incisive former radio man Jim Ball this hour on the program. Stacked to talk about because it's been probably one of the biggest weeks in news in Sydney for many, many years. We'll touch on a bizarre story from a local Sydney council, which seems to have done some kind of deal or struck some kind of voice-like deal with the local Indigenous community, which sounds like it's something that goes beyond their remit. And one councillor in particular has come out strongly and publicly to criticise any kind of deal done with elders of a tribe that may have occupied that particular district much more than 200 years ago. But what right do local councillors have to make a deal? And since we've just gone to a referendum and told the federal government they can't do a deal or can't forge a treaty, what right does a local council have of doing the same thing? We'll also discuss the latest act of media censorship, the banning of reportage on the issue of youth crime in Queensland. It wouldn't have anything to do with the fact that Queenslanders are going to the polls very soon, would it? I have a feeling that's what it's all about. So they've got the biggest problem on their lap at the moment, which is youth crime. It's everywhere. It's rife. It seems as if no one can stop it. But we don't want it to be put on television, not as we gear up for a state election. It is the greatest, most, I guess, unhidden piece of censorship I have ever seen attempted by a state government in Australia. And we'll talk about the Australian hospital system too, which is hemorrhaging. And certainly we're told today at breaking point. Next hour on the program, I want to look at the claim earlier in the week that coral worldwide was in a critical stage of bleaching. And the Great Barrier Reef in particular, they say some of them will be lucky to recover. How many times have we heard that before? I'll speak with one of the Barrier Reef's most outspoken scientists, Professor Peter Ridd, and we'll hear what he makes of these catastrophic statements once again. Whenever it comes to the Great Barrier Reef, everyone wants to talk catastrophe. Yet everywhere I go, people who have been to the Great Barrier Reef love what they see. The corals, the sea creatures, everything associated with it. Is it dead? Is it dying? We'll find out from Peter Ridd next hour on the program. And One Nation campaign director Craig Kelly is on the show again today. We love having Craig on. We'll talk about the Prime Minister's poster company for charging electric vehicles, the Tritium Group. Now, the only problem with his most loved EV charging company is that today they've gone into administration. So much for green evangelism. Another kiss of death from the Labor Prime Minister. We'll discuss the latest record migration data, which we simply cannot sustain. We've broken a previous record in the last month of data. And the eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, who I've spoken about on a couple of occasions this week, interfering in what we would normally see broadcast on television news. We're talking about what occurred at Bondi. We're talking about what occurred at the church at Wakeley. Now, I would have thought what we saw and what was put to air was the kind of thing we have seen on television news for many, many decades. Why have we got someone like Julie Inman Grant telling us we can't put it on social media and they can't show it on television all of a sudden? There's something not right about that. Craig Kelly joining us next hour, and he is not too supportive of Julie Inman Grant as either. And in between all of those guests, and even while I'm speaking with the guest, I'd love you to be part of the conversation. You can jump on one of our talkback lines and let it rip. Let me know what you think. You can dial in from the US or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. It's early morning, just gone 6 o'clock in the UK. Very good morning to you. 033-0024-1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, it's 1-800-670-310. They are our numbers. And this is Chris Smith. Let's get on with this. On the Global News Talk Network, this is TNT.
Giving you what you want.
I want the facts.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, what is it about China that makes world leaders think China is about to declare war on their country? Is there anything that China has done, think about this, to give these quivering, insecure power trippers reason to think that? Now, I'm not so sure there is, which is why I wanted to raise this today. Has China become the military bully of the South China Sea? Well, yes, they have. But this is a space that borders countries like Brunei, Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam, hardly the world's superpowers. So if they want to play bully in their own backyard, surely we just allow them to do what they want, don't we? Has China built up its nuclear submarine force? Well, yes, they've done that as well. They have six in the water at the moment, almost the same as the United States, but they're used in local waters, not in the west coast of the United States of America. Has China launched anything that looks like an exercise in preparing for war? Well, they've done that, but it's only ever been over and around Taiwan, which it wants to be, you know, make part of China. That's not a play for world supremacy. That's not an exercise that would assist them taking over Australia. And do they want to be the world's economic superpower? Well, yes, they do. Why can't they try and be? What, some countries don't have the right to be? Is that what the United States thinks? If you've got 1.42 billion people as part of your population and more in retirement than are working, which is a statistic, you'd kind of want to be really, really, really strong and strong enough to afford to keep them out of poverty, wouldn't you? Yesterday on the program, I raised this anti-China attitude with New South Wales Libertarian MP John Ruddick. And more specifically, I pointed to China's bad behaviour towards the West. And I said that I thought Western leaders were just overstating China's military threat.
I think we should be trying to sort of foster better relations. In the 1980s, we had a lot of very good world leaders. It was just a coincidence, but you know, we had Reagan and Thatcher, we had Mikhail Gorbachev, we had Deng Xiaoping. And the mood in the 1980s, after four decades of the Cold War and hostility, we started to say, well, maybe we can just have a good discussion and become friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Reagan and Gorbachev did become friends.
Yeah.
And this is good for the world. Now, I feel like we've got a lot of insecure leaders. And because they're insecure, they have to sort of beat their chest to prove how tough they are. And that's dangerous. Now, Ronald Reagan was as tough as they get, okay? But he was the great, you know, and he did build up the American military. He said, look, don't mess with the Soviets because, you know, we got better technology than you. So without firing a shot, he won the Cold War. Now, it was the defense build-up, but it was also his personal charm, you know, and convincing people that, you know, we want to have good relations with other people. So I am worried that the military-industrial complex is so hell-bent on saying, you know, Putin's Hitler, the Chinese are Hitler, you know, they're going to invade us. Okay, well, I'm very sceptical of it all.
as I am, very skeptical. I know the Communist Party can't be trusted, but it's a bit like foolishly suggesting that Putin is hell-bent on invading Western Europe. How is that beginning to happen? What are we seeing that says that that is a proper forecast? I don't see anything. Are there millions of soldiers building up on the western side of the Ukraine? Yes, but it's the wrong side if you were trying to take over Western Europe. But up pops Joe Biden this week, calling China all kinds of names and refusing to trade with them on key products.
I always say to my colleagues when I meet other world leaders, I say, would you trade places with China? Would you trade places with their problems? They've got a population that is more people in retirement than working. They're not importing any. They're not bringing. They're xenophobic. Nobody coming else coming in. They've got real problems. I'm not looking for a fight with China. I'm looking for competition, but fair competition. In addition, we're standing up for peace and stability across the Taiwan Straits. I've revitalized our partnerships and our alliances in the Pacific with India, Australia, South Korea, the Philippines, and other Pacific Island nations. I made sure that we have the most advanced technologies that we've developed and invented, and they can't be sent to China or undermine our, because they'll undermine our national security. When I spoke with Xi Jinping, he said, why? I said, because you're using it for all the wrong reasons, so you're not going to get those advanced computer chips.
He says there that China is xenophobic. Well, I lived in China for 2 years. No one marched me out of the country. I could have stayed there for another 10. That's not being xenophobic. And I've got lots of, not friends, but certainly acquaintances who are working in China at the moment. And even if they are xenophobic, what's that got to do with China being some kind of military threat against the world, as the US government often suggests? The United States, the United Kingdom and Australia have formed AUKUS. Japan and Canada will likely to be part of that pact by the end of the year. It is aimed at having nuclear submarines stationed in Australia to thwart Chinese military aggression. How are they being militarily aggressive to China? The foreign minister was in the country only 3 weeks ago. This week, Australia announced multi-billion dollar investments in missiles and drones, again to defend against Chinese aggression. The Chinese simply replied, Australia should drop its Cold War mentality. And if the world is preparing for war with China over Beijing's mission to unify with Taiwan, they may be picking the wrong hill to die on. It's another local territorial land dispute, which, like the Ukraine, which, like Gaza, shouldn't allow the West to stick its noses in. That's my view. We do way too much of the big world cop kind of approach than we should. It's not our fight. Gaza's not our fight. Our fight is not in Ukraine. And our fight certainly isn't in the Southeast China Sea. John Ruddick triggered my comments today. Joe Biden's hostility with those comments about China served for me as an example of how sensitive Western leaders are. Is there not major mutual benefit if the West has access to the mammoth market made up of 1.42 billion Chinese? I would have thought there is. And until China starts stationing their Coast Guard ships off the coast of Hawaii or off the coast at Cairns, surely we should stop embellishing the real chances of China declaring war on the West. I don't see it happening. As Beijing said itself, drop your Cold War mentality. Somehow I don't think the West will, because the global military industrial complex wants as many wars as governments want disputes and can afford to pay for them. This is TNT. We'll be right back.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's get to our Friday regular, a man who was the champion of nighttime talkback radio for so many years with 2GB and also 2UE, based in Sydney, but broadcasting nationally. He's politically incorrect. That's why he's on the program, which we love. Jim Ball, welcome back to TNT.
Hi, Chris. Did you notice how politically incorrect those that were politically incorrect are now pretty much on the ball and very correct? They've gone from politically correct to politically brilliantly correct.
I think I need a degree to work that one out, but I'm actually with you. I'm actually with you. Things change. It's like all of those conspiracists who said
we need more of them because we've run out of conspiracy theories.
Well, maybe that's true, but look through the pandemic, mate. All the conspiracists have turned out to be true.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, there's so many of them. Yeah, Russian collusion was a conspiracy until it wasn't. So many. It's just about everything these days. My antenna now is such that everything is true until it's proven to be a conspiracy instead of the other way around.
Yes.
You know, it's the BS detector in me.
Yeah, you're right.
The BS detector, yeah.
Correct. All right. I want to talk about the Trump trial. Let's start abroad. It's about to begin. We've got prosecutors planning on holding Trump in contempt if he starts opening his mouth again. Gee, they want to get his guts, don't they?
They certainly do. And of course, who's in contempt here? I think it's the damn judge. And these guys, the problem with the American system, and I never want to hear Americans lecturing the world again about their robust democracy. The idea of elected judges and elected DAs is absurd because straight away it's political. And here we are. You're in a very blue Democrat city, New York, with Democrat judges, Democrat. He hasn't got a home. Look, Chris, there's not a living, breathing American who, either good or bad, doesn't have an opinion on Trump. Not one. In the entire world, there's not a person who doesn't know who he is and simply doesn't have an opinion.
So are you suggesting he can't possibly get a fair trial because of that?
Of course he can't.
Yeah.
Of course he can't. I mean, I've seen a few of the interviews with people who've escaped the jury duty, and they're all saying the same sort of thing. Yeah, I've got an opinion, don't like him. It's just amazing that they wouldn't shift the trial. It had to happen in New York. Look, this is in a way playing to Trump's, I think it's playing into his court. They're trying to keep him off the campaign trail. What they've done is allowed Trump to make the trial and the courtroom his campaign HQ.
Yeah.
The other day he went, and I'll come back to that in a moment. The other day he left the courthouse and went down to this bodega in Harlem. Now this is the same bodega, a little corner store we'd call it, although it's not a corner, who I think 18 months ago, 2 years ago, this guy was robbed and he pulled out a knife from under the counter and stabbed the guy, murdered him, killed him. They said murdered, but they retracted that. He murdered the robber. And Alvin Bragg, same guy, this is Trump's genius. Alvin Bragg, the same guy, was going to charge, or in fact did charge, the bodega owner with murder until the whole city blew up, because they're sick of the crime. And now you're going to charge the guy who killed the assailant. You're going to charge him with murder. So Trump went there. And what a slap in the face to Bragg, you know. And, of course, you saw the crowds on television. They were ballistic for Trump. You know, this is all black people and colored people down there in Harlem saying, Trump, 4 more years, all that kind of stuff. But, you've got to ask yourself, who's in contempt here? Is it the judge? Or because I think he is. The fact that he won't recuse himself because of his obvious links, well-documented, chronicled links to the Democrat Party. But it's a great opportunity. I mean, he's threatening Trump with contempt. Now, picture, get the image, Trump cuffs down behind bars. Fantastic. Trump would love it. And they've got to be very, very, very careful, because they do that and it's game over for both the judge, because I look, this judge, he's going to have a target on his back, literally, for the rest of his life. If Trump goes down, he goes down. And I mean, in the worst possible way, they're not going to tolerate it. They simply won't. Somebody will do something crazy, deservedly so. Look, on that bodega business, Dan Bongino often says, and it's so true, and I've never thought about it this way, and I think the Mark Latham handshake with John Howard in Tasmania 2004 changed that one handshake changed the election. Bongino says, elections are about snapshots and soundbites. That's it. You get the wrong snapshot, the wrong soundbite, or the right one, and it's game over in either direction. And that's what on Tuesday, whatever day it was, when Trump went to that, they did a split screen. They had Biden doddering around with nobody there. He was in a takeaway food place yesterday, Biden. Nobody stood up for him. There was no one there. It was just cringy, embarrassing. Whereas with Trump, the crowds went wild, as they say. And look, the other thing about this, Chris, is they won't allow this to be televised. Now, O.J. Simpson's trial and many other trials are televised. And I suspect the reason for this, in fact, I'm sure it's the reason, it's all about spin and controlling the narrative so that daily proceedings can be washed and rinsed and then filtered and packaged through the mainstream media and through their partisan lens of CNN and MSNBC and New York Times, Washington Post. And so it's not about convincing a jury of 12. It's about poisoning the minds of the tens of millions of electors. That is what it's about. And what they vote, how they vote on November 5. They can't beat Trump at the ballot box, and they've tried getting him taken off the ballots. That didn't work. So this lawfare business, which is an ugly thing, this is really ugly, using the law. You know, here they are lecturing Russia about Navalny and all of that stuff and the way he died. Well, they're doing exactly the same thing. They're putting their opposition in jail. Mm. And there was a couple of other points I wanted to make about this. Here's my little point.
But the point you've made about the judge is something that can't be ignored. I was listening to an ABC report on this when I was mucking around at the gym earlier today. And I was watching the ABC tut-tut about the fact that there's criticism of the judge. And they tut-tutted like as if, Trump would say that. There is no doubt at all that the judge is a Democratic appointee who
who's
given donations from the party.
Yeah, and his daughter is very involved in the Democrat Party as well, raising billions.
Look, if it was happening in Australia, he would have to excuse himself.
Or if it was a Trump judge who was in the same basket, you can imagine. Now, look, I don't think the left quite understands what they've unleashed with all of this. During the 2020 campaign, using the pandemic as cover, combined with the collusion and cover of much of the mainstream media, particularly social media, Joe Biden campaigned from the basement. Remember? Very rarely. Yeah. And he used I can't come out, COVID, all that kind of stuff, social distancing. And, well, what we have now is exactly the same tactic, except it's a bit of a twist to it. There's no pandemic yet, but it's quite apparent that Biden is free to campaign from coast to coast, not that anybody wants to see him. Trump is the one in the basement, as it were. That is, he's locked up in court for the next 6 or 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, the basement equivalent. But Trump is a smart operator, and he's turning it to his advantage. And remember remember that photo behind bars, or the mugshot of Trump in Georgia, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
This is the same sort of thing. If anything happens with Trump putting in cuffs or anything like that, there'll be a photo and that too will go viral. Mm. But that's what's happening here. Trump is campaigning from the basement, as it were. He's turning the tables. and making the obviously contrived injustice of these cases. That's his campaign strategy, and I think it's a brilliant move.
Yeah, very true. We've got to get through some topics. We'll take a break. I'll get you some news for our listeners and our viewers. We'll get to the newsroom, and we'll come back with Jim Ball right after this on TNT.
We interrupt this program.
Here we go.
This is huge.
Huge.
Huge news.
Huge.
Huge.
Huge news.
Huge.
You need to listen to this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. Despite insisting it supports a two-state solution, the US has used its veto power to block a resolution calling for Palestine to be granted full membership in the United Nations. London and Washington have announced sweeping sanctions against Iran's military drone program in response to its retaliatory strikes against Israel. And over 160 Ukrainian children who were supposed to have been kidnapped by Russia have been found living in Germany.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Jim Ball is my guest at the moment on the Chris Smith program. Jim, I wanted to talk about the fact that one local council in Sydney seems to be getting a little bit carried away with their own self-importance. And I noticed that Cumberland City Councillor Steve Christo, who I've got some time for, has accused the Labor-dominated council, so his colleagues on the council, of ignoring the wishes of residents in the area, which he says voted 64% no in the Voice referendum, which they did, by attempting to force through an agreement with the Gandangara Local Aboriginal Land Council. Since when has a local council any right whatsoever to do deals with elders?
Well, since never. I mean, they're not even sensitive about the referendum was only, 7 months ago. There's been no passage of time for them to revisit this period and this particular issue. And, you know, what they're doing is basically saying, well, we don't care what you voted, 64%. We're going to go ahead with this anyway. Now, the thing is, this particular land council area covers, I think it's six other local government areas. This is just one council. It's kind of, people who aren't aware, it's kind of out around the Western Sydney Airport, where it's not even finished yet, Liverpool and west of Liverpool. That's the area we're talking about. But apparently it covers six other local government areas. And no one's been consulted. This is a rogue committee on the council. Even the mayor, her name is Lisa Lake, I think it is, she wasn't even aware of it until it kind of hit the decks on the night, whenever it was, last Tuesday or whenever. But Christo says this is the ALP having a dummy spit, throwing their toys out of the cot, trying to force through treaty by default. We'll just dictate our will upon the people because they voted no. And that's hard to disagree. Like I said, it covers some. And the other thing about this is that Indigenous people in that local government area comprise 0.6% of the 245,000 residents.
How many percent again?
0.46, 1,436 out of 245,000. So, yeah, that's democracy, you know? That's... Yeah, Lisa Lake, she's the mayor. She said she knew nothing about any of this. Dale, I'm just having a look here. They want, a say in the likes of undetermined land claims. Think that Bali Club, right? We were talking about a few weeks ago. Cultural heritage assessment and protection, access to land and waters, Aboriginal language street signs, joint management and co-management of lands, and welcome to country performances and ceremonies. So, I I don't know, when are the local government elections? It is this year. I think it's a pretty dumb thing to be doing. It's like this issue in Queensland we'll talk about shortly, because their election is in late October.
Jim, you were exactly right. Those voters will mark the ones on that council, and they are Labor-aligned councillors. They'll mark them, unvotable.
Yeah, well, you've got a 15-member council, 15-member council. Labor's got 8 seats, 4 are from our local community. I guess that's a little group. Only 2 are Liberals, and there's 1 independent. So,
and reasonable Indigenous residents would just look at this and laugh as well.
Well, that's the other point. You're dead right. That's the other point, is that ordinary day-to-day Indigenous people in Australia live in suburban houses. There are people in my suburb, one you and I know, a radio guy, lives just up the road from me here.
Yep.
You wouldn't pick him in a police lineup. And they just get on with their lives, and they drive their four-wheel drives, and they've got their tradies tool, their toolkit and all the rest of it. They're just average people, ordinary people.
And the
people.
One we're talking about, like many of his mates, don't have their hands out.
No, absolutely. In fact, he texted me many times over the course of the referendum. He said, "These bastards, mate, they're grifting pricks." You know, he hates them. Yeah, not hates them as in hates them, but their tactic.
Hates the tactic, something hates nothing. The attitude and the victimhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Very, very true. I don't know where this is going to go, but I do know that Steve Christo, who I think you may have had something to do with on air, I certainly have, he keeps them honest, mate. So as long as that council has him looking over their shoulders, I think that is a good thing for the people of Cumberland.
Well, the thing is, this was a committee recommendation of the council, so it wasn't full council at this stage. As if the mayor wasn't even aware of it. Now, you'd think that she would be plugged into what was going on in her own council, but apparently she knew nothing about it. And I think now that it's out, and I don't know if the other media have done much with it, but now that it's out there, news.com.au have, but now that it's out there, I think, common sense would dictate they'd back down. Who knows?
They'd have to.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about something that is probably in the top 2, if not the top 1 issue that's dominating discussion leading up to the Queensland state election, and that is youth crime. Youth crime in particular in the northern towns of Queensland. It's been reported left, right and centre of the problems, the attempts to try and fix it up, the police who have tried and failed, the politicians who think they've got the answers and they don't. And now they're talking about the likelihood, this has come from the Labor government of Queensland, the likelihood that they place a ban on the reporting of this issue. To me, this is the worst smokescreen I've ever heard of censorship.
No, absolutely. But it's worse than that, Chris. I'll get to that in a second. It's worse than you've just outlined. So at least the Premier has had the common sense to reject the idea coming from his backbench. But this single event tells you something about the mindset of the radical left and how they want to control everything. As the Australian editorial writes today, it's hard to imagine a better way for politicians to demonstrate their contempt for the voters than to call for muzzling of the media. In short, it's not about controlling the narrative or reworking or rewriting the narrative, Chris. It's about blowing up the narrative.
Yeah,
you know, we've heard about controlling it or rewriting it or reworking it. No, this is totally smothering the narrative altogether. They're prepared to sweep under the carpet rather than deal with the issue. And that's typical. Pretend the problem of youth crime doesn't exist. Just prior to 2020, and this was the point I was going to make, just prior to the 2020 election, the state Labor government failed, but the motive was there, in an attempt to pass laws ahead of the 2020 state election to restrict journalists reporting corruption complaints about politicians with the threat of jail time. So, yeah, okay, we're corrupt. You report it, you go to jail. That's very New York. That's very Alvin Bragg. You're the crim, but we get to send you to jail. I mean, the chutzpah of that. Oh. And you've got to hear it a second time.
Yeah.
They, well, they tried to introduce a law that would prevent the media from reporting on corruption complaints and under the threat of jail time. And again, referring to the Australian editorial today, some members consider that greater regulation of traditional news media could assist in preventing the glorification of young offenders, which can encourage their peers to offend. So said the draft report. This is just, look, this is their way of saying, look, we can't control this. So we're not going to do anything. We're not going to let anyone talk about it. We're going to bury it. It's, you know what it is, Chris? This is, it's about shaping perceptions. That's what they're trying to do, control narratives, shape perceptions.
Yep.
And its policy is, it's a policy lifted from Frank Drebin in The Naked Gun. Famous line, move along, nothing to see here. Remember that?
Yeah.
Imagine exactly. For a minute.
But the hide they have to think that Queenslanders will buy this as something that is somehow, you know, responsible government is just beyond me.
It's an insult to the intelligence. It really is. I mean, imagine for a minute, given what we now know, if this policy of media control and burying the narrative existed in the Northern Territory right now, we'd know nothing. Next to nothing about the rampant youth crime, nothing at all. Because now I don't know how such a, with national newspapers like The Australian, with social media, okay, which media would the Labor government in Queensland jail? Who would they hold in contempt or whatever? The Murdoch, good luck. Yeah. I just don't see how it would work. And it a bit of a brain fart, but still, it just goes to show you the way their mind works.
Yeah,
that's the scary bit. And again, just referring back to the Oz editorial, the Queensland government thinks it can reduce youth crime and enhance its election chances. That's what it's about, by regulating media published in plain sight and governed by the rule of law. Yet it is an idea that keeps coming up in Queensland. Election chances and the outcome. That's really what this is all about. It's controlling the flow of bad news.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable censorship. It's so obvious. It's just embarrassing.
And look, Labor, they look like they're going to get shafted anyway at the next election in October, so this kind of thing won't do them any good. No. The fact that they're even saying the quiet part out loud, even if they can't and won't do anything about it. The fact that it's in the conversation.
Look, Queenslanders get together for their barbecues and their family and friend get-togethers over the weekend. This will come up in conversation, and they'll just go, "What a bunch of cretins! How dare they treat us so shabbily?" That's it for me. That's what happens after a story like this.
That's right. How dare they? This is really what we're all about. That's what they're doing.
One last issue I wanted to raise with you out of The Australian today, a report suggesting that the hospital system in Australia is at breaking point. Now, I've heard many, many interviews today on various radio stations about the fact that there are waiting lists and there are, you know, people who are dying sitting in queues, and there are not enough doctors on call. There are not enough nurses being able to work in hospitals. Da, 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 da. I thought that we had the most fantastic hospital and health system in the world.
Mm. Well, we did, and I think in certain pockets we still do. But look, the smooth ride that we've experienced over the last, well, in my lifetime, in public health, housing, education, for most of our collective lives, that seems to be grinding to a halt. Apparently, the proportion of public hospitals for every Australian over 65 has fallen to the lowest point ever. Now, just for some numbers for you, and they're not difficult numbers, 14.3 beds per 1,000 population compared to 32.5 beds per 1,000 population in 1992. So think about that, from 32 per 1,000 in 92 to 14 beds per 1,000 in 2024, 32 years later. So it kind of reminds me of that chaos theory, which holds that when a butterfly flaps its wings in the Amazon, you know, a tsunami rolls up on Bondi Beach. The butterfly, and this is the point of all of this, the butterfly in this instance is that of the provision and the delivery of basic services and infrastructure consistent with the demand. Okay? that delivery hasn't kept pace, simply hasn't kept pace with the population growth, while money, and this is the crucial issue, money has been diverted and poured into pet projects and areas that shouldn't be of any concern to government at all, like renewable energy subsidies, for example, like the Go for Broke, Let It Rip NDIS, or instead of buying submarines, for example, off the shelf, we have to pretend we're in a position to build our own, again, to buy votes, in this case, in South Australia. And even when they do, the project is always fraught with problems and difficulties and delays, budget overruns, Snowy 2.0 from $2 billion to $20 billion, Inland Rail, $15 billion to $30 billion, and, I don't know, 10 years behind. These are big billion-dollar projects, and they may not appear to be connected with hospitals and so on, but they are, because you can only, and this is the butterfly flapping its wings, you can only spend your dollar once.
Yeah.
And you've got to spend it in the most productive area that provides for the community, not fantasy projects like renewable energy, Chris Bowen's windmills and solar panels. They have a limited number of ways to spend money. And when you go splurging it, spraying it around on all of these vanity projects, then you're not spraying it around on things that really matter to people. You know, hospitals, I couldn't even rat where electricity came from. If they can deliver it through renewables, providing there's no subsidies, and it never stops, and I don't have to worry about blackouts, well, that's fine. That's great. I'll take it. Thanks. Nuclear, coal, doesn't matter. But I do want, when I get up to the hospital, I do want the hospital to be there. I want it to operate. I want it to have beds. The same for the schools and the education and everything else. But they haven't taken, and we talk about immigration. What did we have last year? 500,000 people?
Yeah.
But have we had $500,000 worth of hospitals and schools and roads and all the rest of it? Don't think so.
So not the last data, I'm going to talk to Craig Kelly about this a bit later, but the last data we got, which was yesterday, we had, I think it was February or January, one of those months, 100,000 migrants.
Sorry, 100,000?
Yeah.
For the last 12 months?
1 month.
Oh, yes. Beg your pardon. Sorry, yes. I think that was January or December. Yeah. Yeah, there was something like that. So not only the energy grid and made it unreliable, and I'm just using that as an example, made that unreliable and the prices out of control, playing and picking favourites. But in doing so, they've ignored the important things. Hospitals, schools, roads, the stuff that matters to mum and dad in the suburbs.
Mm.
And that gets ignored, again, for vanity projects like renewables. Mm. And must have, oh, no, we can't, we've got to have submarines built for Australian conditions. Well, hang on. The conditions under the water are the same as they are anywhere else in the world. Not, there's no such thing as Australian conditions. This idea that we can't buy our submarines off the shelf. That's, again, a bit like the Queensland government. It's an insult to the intelligence.
Yeah. Very, very true. I've got to get to a commercial break. We've been through some issues today. Mate, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your analysis as well.
Thank you so much.
Much appreciated. Jim Ball, who we speak to each and every Friday on the program, and we appreciate his time. He dissects it like no other. As he says, he was politically incorrect, but that's all of a sudden politically correct. Work that out. I'll take a break and come back with your calls. Hopefully you can call in on the number from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310, or the UK 033-0024-1026, or from the United States and Canada, 1-888-201-6425. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School. College first round draft pick, on and off the field. We were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating. But I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years, was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. The second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper. We have to redefine what being a strong man is and heal. Love your mind.
Food isn't just fuel to live, it's fuel to grow. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. When people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger, and together we can open endless possibilities for people to thrive. Visit feedingamerica.org/act now.
You're listening to Chris Smith
on today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
All right, plenty more to tell you about. I did want to tell you what Joe Biden has done today, apart from calling China xenophobic and getting in a little bit of trouble for that. Many of the commentators are sort of saying, well, hang on a minute, you're the one saying that Putin's marching into Western Europe, and you're the one that's saying that the Chinese are about to take over the whole of the Indo-Pacific. Who's the xenophobic one then? Well, President Biden's administration announced a new round of sanctions today intended to punish key figures in Iran's drone programs after those weapon systems were used to strike Israel on April 13. Now, the moment I read that much earlier today, I thought to myself, is this the quid pro quo? Is this the United States saying to Israel, if you don't retaliate for what they did over the weekend with their drones and their missiles, which we don't want you to retaliate, but we will apply a whole heap of sanctions to Iran on your behalf. Maybe that has been the deal to keep Israel quiet, because Israel doesn't do this sort of thing. They fight back not only quickly, but they fight back threefold. We know that. So Biden has said, less than a week ago, Iran launched one of the largest missile and drone attacks the world has ever seen against Israel. Well, we know it was a fake missile and drone attack because Israel had hours to defend it. Together with our allies and partners, the US defended Israel. We helped defeat this attack. And today we are holding Iran accountable, imposing new sanctions and export controls on Iran. The Iranian government launched its missile and drone barrage against Israel in response to the April 1 airstrike targeting the Iranian embassy in Damascus. We know what that was all about. The sanctions target leaders and entities, said Biden, connected to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Iran's defense ministry, and the Iranian government's missile and drone program that enabled this brazen assault. Accompanying President Biden's statement, the Treasury announced sanctions against 16 Iranian individuals and two entities involved in Iran's drone programs. So this is fairly widespread, I've got to say. This is a little bit more impressive than what it may have sounded like in the headlines. Among those facing new US sanctions are six individuals deemed to be involved in testing and supplying attack drones throughout the Middle East on behalf of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. There's a list of individuals, but one, there are very hard names to pronounce and you won't know them anyway. Also sanctioned are a list of people who come from an Iranian-based Kimia Part Sivan company, an Iranian drone developer. So the Iranian drone developer will be very much in the sights of the United States. And the Treasury Department also announced sanctions against a group of people who are leaders of a company from Mado. Now, Mado is an Iranian firm that produces the other sorts of drones. There were two sorts of drones used by the Iranians. There are second sort of drones called the 131 and 136 drone made by Mado. That company has had itself subject to sanctions as well. So there you go. So that's what President Biden did today, which I've got to say is a little bit more comprehensive than what it looked like in the headlines. There is a very interesting story in the UK Telegraph today that I thought you might be interested in. I won't get to read it all now, but I just wanted to tell you what it's all about. It's about Britain's worklessness crisis and how many people actually don't work in Britain. And we know the same kind of thing is happening throughout the West as we increase welfare payments, as we provide better cushions in the West for those who either can't find a job or don't want to find a job. Now, this is a story written by Nick Gutteridge in the UK Telegraph. It was in the cafe of a leisure centre in Barking, East London, last month that the Work and Pension Secretary attempted to shatter the big taboo about Britain's worklessness crisis. Sitting at a table overlooking a windswept park, Mel Stride told the Telegraph that mental health culture had gone too far. The intervention was a calculated risk from a level-headed politician aware it would spark controversy. But he wanted to try and shift the conversation about how to tackle the spiraling number of people, especially the young, being signed off as long-term sick. Statistics released earlier this week show Mr. Stride was right to feel a growing sense of alarm over the rising tide of worklessness in Britain. The number of Britons classed as economically inactive, meaning they are neither in a job nor looking for one, has ballooned to 9.25 million post-pandemic. Just grapple with that statistic for a second. 9.25 million Britons who basically are economically inactive. Most of that increase can be attributed to a huge spike in long-term sickness. Do not tell me that 9.25 million people are all of a sudden sick in the long term. I won't believe it. I don't believe it. Prove it to me. Someone has got to prove it to me for me to believe something like that. It's added 717,000 people to the benefits bill since the start of 2020. So how in 4 years can almost a million people say that they are sick long term? Really? What, from a jab? Doubt it. What, from not being diagnosed throughout the pandemic because they were locked up at home? Doubt it. This is about a mental culture. This is about being able to do this, maybe earn some quick bucks untaxed on the side and think that they can get away with it. That's what this is about. Even more worryingly is the fact that young people are driving this trend in Britain, with people in their early 20s now more likely to be signed off than 40-year-olds. So that makes it even more unbelievable that you have 20-year-olds in that degree to that number saying that they are long-term sick and they can't possibly work. They can't possibly get a job and they should never be considered or being forced to try and get themselves a job. There is something wrong with the culture of young people in Britain, and maybe you can tell me what it is. Maybe you can tell me that it happens in Australia as well. Maybe this is the kind of culture that's ongoing in the United States, or is it just acute to Britain only? Give us a call on the talkback lines. I've run out of time. I've got to get to some news for you, but we'll come back and there's plenty more to come on the program. Do not go anywhere. This is Chris Smith on TNT.